Transport for the North podcast. Hello and welcome to the Transport for the North podcast. I am your host, Gemma, and today we are continuing with our Business Matters series, speaking to guests from all across our region about the importance of business and how transport can enable business growth opportunities. Today, I am delighted to be joined by one of our region's MPs. She is Emma Lewell-Buck, the MP for South Shields, and she's here to tell us all about that wonderful part of the world. Hello to you, Emma. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks very much for having us, Gemma.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. So could you start off for us, please, Emma? I know your listeners in your neck of the woods will be very familiar with your work as an MP, but for our listeners wider across the North, tell us a little bit about your career to date, how you became an MP and why it's such a fantastic thing to do.
So I've been the Member of Parliament for South Shields since 2013. I came in on a by-election. Prior to that, I had multiple jobs. I had about 17 different jobs. So I've done, you name it, I've pretty much done it. Immediately before I entered Parliament, I was a frontline child protection social worker, and I was also on our local council. But prior to that, I'd worked in bars, restaurants, call centres. I'd sold things out of a bag, ran pubs. I'd been a cleaner. I literally would turn my hand to anything to make a living, because that's how I was brought up.
Fantastic. So why go into politics then? How did that come about?
I suppose growing up, I used to often get really frustrated because my dad worked in the shipyards and all the men in my family did. So they were the main earners. And I couldn't understand why, despite them being such hard workers, we often really struggled because the shipyards were closed, jobs were disappearing, and it just made me really angry. And I thought, it's so unfair that you've got, you know, a massive area that relies on industries like coal mining and shipbuilding, really hard workers being punished and then no other employment opportunities being there for them. And it just used to really get us upset, and just social justice. I used to originally naively, I thought, oh, well, if I become a solicitor, then I can change it. And then I realised that they carry out the laws made by Parliament. So I thought, right, it's Parliament where I need to be then. So, you know, I wasn't from one of those families. Like, my nana and my gran used to say, politics isn't for the likes of us, Emma. You know, we always thought it was for people who, well, the people we saw on the telly. You know, when I was growing up watching Parliament, there was no one that sounded like me, no one that looked like me, and no one that talked about anything, quite frankly, that mattered to my community. But I was quite, believe it or not, everyone always laughs when I say this, but I used to be a really shy, quiet kid, and I was really nervous about speaking in public. So I went on loads of training courses. I learned how to present myself better. It was a long process. I used to, in all them 17 jobs I had, I used to save my money up and go away for weekends, till I got to the point where I thought, you know what, I can actually do this. And like everything in politics, I was in the right place at the right time and I was ready for it. So a lot of it was about luck as well, but it's the best job I've ever done. I absolutely love it. And I love just being the voice for my community. There's no bigger honour, really.
Well, that's so great to hear, and here you are now after all that hard work, as you say, getting that sort of training experience, booking yourself up for the going into the wonderful world of politics, and here you are. And we'll, as we go through some of the questions today, I'm sure you'll tell us about the ways that you're working to support your community and taking their voices and their needs up the chain, as it were, to Parliament. You touched on there a couple of the historic industries for South Shields and much of the wider northeast as well, in terms of shipbuilding and mining. Give us a little bit more of an insight into the northeast, the industries of the area, and how that's changed to where we are today.
Yeah, so I suppose, you know, our River Tyne used to be the lifeblood of the area. You had shipyards all along it, and then that was, you know, again, like we had the coal mining, and we had a reputation for being one of the powerhouses, I think, of the whole of the United Kingdom. And a lot of that disappeared, as we all know, and now we still have a thriving economy. And we are still a manufacturing base. You know, everyone knows we've got Nissan here. We've got other organisations here. We've got Hitachi Rail, Caterpillar. But we need more. We need more investment, because we have a history here of building things and making things and doing them well. And I think what we saw in those years after the yards shut and the mines shut is we've seen a disappearing of core skills that could now be used in emerging industries. And it's trying to get those skills back, you know, working with our local college to make sure those skills match the emerging industries, the green industries that are out there. So, you know, I've been working with our port of Tyne, which is now home to the base of the world's biggest offshore wind farm. You know, that's a real win for us. And linking that up with our local college and all these emerging skills, that's something that could really put us on the map for the future once again. So I think there is hope. There is hope there. You know, we're grafters here. We work hard. People want to work. People don't want to be unemployed. And we have a history of hard work. So it's just about those opportunities coming our way.
And in terms of, you mentioned some big names there. So, excuse me, Hitachi, Caterpillar, Nissan, the offshore wind, a real thriving and hopefully growing for many years to come, that industry. What are the benefits that massive companies like these are seeing when they come and set up shop over in South Shields?
Well, I think it goes back to what I said before, how, you know, we're grafters here, we work hard, we want that investment, we welcome them with open arms, you know, we want them to be here, they're going to get no animosity from the local community. And, you know, everyone who's been to South Shields or been anywhere in the Northeast, you can see that, you know, it's housing is cheaper here, we've got loads of open space, it's a healthy place to live. People are lush, people are really friendly. People used to come to South Shields from all over the world. We're a really welcoming place. We want more of that. We want more people bringing industry and skills here. So there's all kinds of benefits. And just the cost of living, even though we have high levels of poverty here and a lot of people are struggling, the cost of living is considerably cheaper here compared to elsewhere in the country, even with the current rise in inflation and all the council tax increases coming. It is still cheaper to live in the Northeast than anywhere else.
The other thing, you referenced some of the work in terms of linking up with colleges and getting those skills. Mm. People want to learn those skills still. So, you know, all these manufacturers and so on, there is talented people. They've got a workforce there, as you say, ready and willing to get stuck in.
Yeah, because then, you know, when I talk to young people around here, they don't want to leave. They love it. They want to stay in South Shields. They don't want to have to go. And when I talk to a lot of people who've come back, who've left, they left for work and they've come back because they've took early retirement because they never wanted to leave in the first place. So it's all ripe there for the taking, really. And I think just taking it back to, obviously, transport issues, I think one of the things we do struggle with, and I think that's well known and it's a well-versed argument, is connectivity. We don't have enough. There's been an announcement today that the government have given us some money to upgrade our bus routes and to cut our fares, but that was nowhere near. Our bid was 800 million and they've gave us 163 million. So you can see there already, we're not going to be able to offer more buses or upgrade stations, offer cheaper tickets like we'd planned. We're going to have to cut some of those things or do them in a different way to make that a viable plan. And then, you know, the government announced last year 3 billion for outside of London for bus services. And then they've only actually offered 1 billion. So I don't know where they got the 3 billion figure from in Parliament, but it's actually transpired as just 1 billion. And they keep saying, you know, the Northeast is getting more money than any of the other regions. But we're not, because those other regions are getting a top up because they've got Metro Mayors and we don't. And they're punishing us for not conforming to their model of local governance.
And what's the practical differences that these that better connectivity and enhanced sort of bus, rail and other transport services, what difference do they make or could they make for people and for businesses?
I remember when I was unemployed, and that was, you know, going back quite some time, but a metro ticket to go to an interview, that costs a lot of money. A lot more than it would do in London. So I use the metro every Monday before I get the train to go to London. And I think from South Shields to Newcastle, it's £5.70 for my ticket. But a similar journey in London would cost us £2.50. So, you know, we've got an area of high unemployment. We've got people who want to work, but it seems like often the odds are against them. Because that cost, if you're going back and forwards for 3 and 4 interviews at £5.70 a pop, you're going to run out of money very quickly. You're not going to be able to survive. So it's things like that. If you want a workforce and you want people to be able to get jobs, then you need cheaper transport. But then on a wider scale, you need connectivity to be able to just send what it is you have around the country, put in its most simplest terms. You know, if you want to send, you know, our river, for example, our river needs dredging. The Tyne needs dredging so we can increase commercial routes on there and we can increase industry. Stuff like that needs to happen on a national scale. We need investment because otherwise that's going to impact on our industries, yeah?
You referenced Port of Tyne earlier, and I'm glad you picked up again on sort of freight there, because our freight and logistics strategy is very close to being published. And as you say, that's wider connectivity, isn't it? Those international opportunities as well, yeah, that really broaden everybody's reach.
I mean, just you'll know as well as I do, and everyone knows this, you know, it's quite easy to travel up and down the country, but anyone from the northeast wanting to go to the northwest. I mean, I remember once using public transport to get to Manchester on a Saturday, and it took us nearly 8 hours. So, you know, things like that. How can we be a thriving hub and work with all of our neighbours and the rest of the country and the rest of the world if it takes that long to just get across the country?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And listeners of this podcast and anybody who's kept up with Transport for the North over the years will know all too well that east-west connectivity is a big issue on rail, on roads, for passengers, for freights. It's just not, as you say, smooth enough and affordable. I'm glad you touched on that there, because that then brings me to looking at the sort of wider vision. So Transport for the North obviously covers the whole of the north of England, a big old area, lots of challenges, lots of differences, lots of similarities too between different parts of the north. How do you see that One North approach helping with business and transport opportunities?
I mean, I think the north always speaks with a really strong voice, don't we? You know, we're not shy in coming forward. You know, we'll always say what it is we want. And I think historically, you used to have perhaps areas like mine shouting, and then you'd have Manchester shouting, Liverpool, you know, they'd all be asking. But now we're all together asking for the same things, and it just makes us stronger and it makes it easier to put in bids that will benefit our whole regions and our whole area and the whole of the north, as opposed to just before where we were stood on our own. And I think that does make a massive difference. And, you know, you've got strong, outspoken mayors in some areas now, and they're meeting regularly to talk about these issues. And just think, you can't talk about it in a silo and cut yourself off. It's got to be done on a group level. And that means that you've got, from a purely political viewpoint, the government, it's easy for them to, you know, say no to one or two people, but to say no to the whole of the north doesn't look good. It's not good PR.
In terms of the businesses in the area, what are they saying? What are they telling you about what needs to happen on the sort of local and regional scale for them to really, you know, achieve their growth ambitions?
I mean, I think it was really sad. I don't know if you saw our Freeport bid, which was a lot stronger than the Teesside bid. Yeah, we got knocked back, and I know they're in the north as well, but I think our bid was, it was wider than just the port area, and we had lots of stuff in there around increasing job opportunities, increasing transport. It would have been a really good bid if that had went through. And I just think the government's levelling up white paper was just such a farcical missed opportunity. You know, we got 300 pages telling us what the problems were, but then no solutions. And we know what the solutions are. We know that better transport links, cheaper transport links, better connectivity, more investment in skills, and more getting more, you know, industry and investment in our area. Because once people see an area is thriving, then they'll come. You know, I'm down London most of the week, and London is just it's busy all the time. There's things being built constantly, and you don't see that so much in the northeast. And there's a reason for that. You need government to be shouting harder instead of offering sound bites like levelling up in the Northern Powerhouse and actually not delivering anything. And it's not easy stuff, this, you know, but you need them to actually sit down and think, right, what are the skill sets we've got in the north? What is it people are telling us they need? And how much money do they need for that to happen? And then do it that way, but they've not bothered.
And again, you touched on it earlier in terms of the social challenges, particularly in South Shields, of course. How does, you know, this investment in transport, this action on levelling up, how does that improve people's day-to-day lives.
So I suppose it goes back to what I said earlier about, you know, if you're unemployed and you're looking for work, you need cheaper transport to be able to get you that. If you've just started work, I mean, some South Shields, for example, a lot of the jobs are in hospitality. So a lot of them are 0 hours contracts. They're short term, you know, they're around the summer because people come and visit our beautiful coastline. So those people need to be able, if they live out of the area or live in a part of Shields that's nowhere near the coast, they need to be able to travel to and from work. And if they're paying, you know, a lot of their wages in transport, then is it worth being in work? You know, this is the reality for some people. It might sound, you know, people might listen to that and think, oh, that's not. But if you're on a 0 hours contract, you've only got like a 10 hours a week, you're on minimum wage or even less, then how do you afford expensive travel like that to get to work?
And then there's the wider impact on the rest of day-to-day life. You know, you then can't be getting out to see friends and family, go to the theatre, swimming.
Well, whatever. Yeah, it goes round in circles, doesn't it? Because if you've got money, then you spend it in the local economy. If you don't have it, you can't. And then you see things shut. And that's why you see high streets with things boarded up. And, you know, once thriving high streets, especially in coastal towns like mine and some of the towns in the north, they're all boarded up now, and that's been decline over a number of years. And again, I completely lay that at the path of the government, because they're the ones who failed to invest in our areas. They've identified it themselves in the Levelling Up white paper. They know they've failed us, but they've offered no solutions.
In terms of your area of South Shields, you've spoken on a couple of examples where things are and need to continue happening. So, you know, you've referenced the Port of Tyne, bus investment, not as much as was bid for, but there's some support there to improve buses. What are the other sort of specific transport interventions that you're flying the flag for in your area?
In terms of South Shields, the main things people use are ferry, the buses and the metro. They're the things that people tend to use the most. So I was part of, you know, with other North East MPs getting the money for the new metro cars, which will be coming online at the end of the year. We've, you know, campaigned, we've supported the bid that's gone in from the North East Combined Authority around improving our bus services. And that announcement today obviously falls really short of what we needed. But then we'll regroup and we'll get together and we'll see what the priorities are and what we can do, because that's better than having nothing, I suppose. And other than that, it's just about banging that drum all the time with government and making it clear to them, because a lot of them live down south. They're not up in the northeast where we are. They don't get it. And some of them, even who are perhaps Northern MPs, don't spend enough time in that patch. So they don't understand the day-to-day challenges that people are facing in terms of trying to get to work, trying to get to school. And the fact that, you know, for a long time, you know, we had, before we had the news of these new metro cars, you'll know it was well documented, there was problems on and off with the metro. That wouldn't have been tolerated anywhere else. If that was Transport for London, the government would have been all over it and it would have been sorted. But because it was us, it was fine. I don't know if you've seen, obviously there's problems as well recently around the new Tyne Tunnel. So I've been involved in that quite a lot. I was actually a councillor when we got the second Tyne Tunnel built, so I'm quite passionate about it. It's quite close to my heart. I remember it cut through my ward at the time, and I remember I was one of the first 100 people to drive through it. And the next day I went to work and drove through it, and I was like, I can't believe it, because I was so used to leaving like 2 hours early for work and being sat in traffic. And I drove through it and I was like banging the ceiling of my car going, yes, my life has changed with this extra tunnel. And then obviously they've done some improvements recently to payment systems, remove barriers, but it's caused a lot of problems. So I'm working with the Tyne Tunnel 2 and Transport for the North and our North East Combined Authority to try and iron out those problems, because I think it's like everything, our metro, our Tyne Tunnel, everything, when it works, it's brilliant and we need it. And it's just, we need to iron out some of those issues.
And that's a fantastic example. You know, I appreciate a tunnel is by no means a simple or cheap thing to do, but once done, it makes such a tangible difference to people's everyday lives. You know, as you say, you referenced a few times, you know, if people are going back into to work to try and get a new job, to try and access new opportunities, knowing that there's a reliable and affordable and efficient way to get there is so important. And that's a really fantastic example.
I've seen a massive decline in like our buses as well. You know, for a very long time, the buses didn't have the investment they needed, so people stopped using them. So now you've got this kind of scenario where people want to use the buses, but they don't because they've got used to not using them. So then some routes are being cut and people are saying, oh, I'll not bother with a bus, I'll walk, or I'll get a lift, or I'll get a taxi. And then they've been in this horrible position where that's meant that then for a period of time had to rise the prices because less people are using it. And I think now we're in a position where with the bids we've been putting into government that that's recognised and we're trying to revitalise it because people do like using the bus. If it's on time and it's cheap enough, they like it.
Yeah, and of course the COVID-19 pandemic has thrown a spanner in the works with that as well. Yeah. So to speak, because, you know, we weren't able to travel for such a long time. A lot of people feeling uncomfortable about getting back onto public transport in particular. And we've got to work on, as you say, that sort of, you know, whole shift back to it. But we need to do that in a way that enables people to do that, that makes it accessible and, you know, a good option for them. Otherwise, they're just not going to do it.
We haven't touched on train travel either. I work cross-party with other North East MPs as well around the East Coast mainline to make sure those routes are preserved, because there has been rumours in the past that some of them might be cut or some of them might be changed. And that is, you know, I said earlier, it's really easy going up and down the country. That's that line. You know, it literally goes from, you know, Scotland down to London quicker than a lot of other trains do. And we need to keep that going as well.
We've referenced a couple of sort of national policy developments and strategies that have been announced over the past kind of 18 months, really. It's been a really busy time. So we've referenced levelling up. We've highlighted bus funding that was out of the Bus Back Better strategy. We've had Build Back Better. We've had Build Back Cleaner. We've had decarbonisation. Yeah. These are all, you know, national strategies, policy developments. What are your thoughts on how some or any of those are actually working for the people of South Shields? And what else do you need to see happen for your constituency with regards to those national policies?
I mean, I think people are angry because we're living through successive governments that are kind of big on announcements and big on, you know, three-word slogans and promising the earth and then delivering nothing. And I think people are starting to see through that now. They're starting to see that actually when you peek behind the curtain, there's nothing there. So, you know, I always laugh when I'm in Newcastle train station now. There's big posters constantly talking about levelling up. And I think, I wonder how much they cost. Could you not have just gave us the money instead to actually level us up? You know, it's all of this kind of thing. It's all very, it seems very much like a corporate PR exercise to make the government look good. But I literally could not say to anyone in South Shields what we got from the Northern Powerhouse and what we've had from Levelling Up. I looked in the Levelling Up document and South Shields was mentioned once, and it's money we've already had. So we're getting nothing from that. And again, we got nothing from Northern Powerhouse. So there's all these phrases that just are empty and mean nothing. At first, people were quite keen and they're like, oh, this sounds promising. But then when your day-to-day life doesn't change and you see no difference, you know that you've been lied to.
Again, we've to come back to the round it up and look at the regional picture. We've highlighted earlier on the sort of One North approach, and the North does have a very strong voice, very clear on what it needs. What are your thoughts on where we go from here, how we continue to champion the needs of the North and get that money through?
I mean, I think it's a case of just continuing to work together and making sure everyone is on the same page. So it's really easy sometimes, isn't it, for people to slip back into, well, even though we're all one voice, to slip back into focusing on their area. And I know I've done that a lot in this interview, and that's natural. But I think when we all come together, we need to remember that what benefits one place benefits the next. It's all, we're all connected in that way. We're all close to each other. It's a small region. So it's about just keep working together, keep having that dialogue, and keep banging the drum. And I think our councils should use our MPs more. They don't use us enough. So sometimes I'll find out something that a bid's gone in or something's being said and MPs didn't know. If we'd known, we would have all one by one been on our feet battering the government and drawing attention to it. So I think there's that as well. It needs to be a strong voice consistently from every single person involved.
that joined up approach, and we are so connected. And as we've touched on, you know, coming across the region, up and down, you know, even within smaller areas is not always that easy, because, you know, buses cross into different transport authorities, one group needing to be talking to another group and so on and so forth. It really is crucial to get that joined approach. Emma, I wonder if you'd like to finish for us with your sort of rallying cry for South Shields. Tell us, you know, anybody for thinking about visiting, coming and moving there, or doing business, why is it such a great place? What have we got to look forward to when we come up and see you?
I mean, I think for anyone, if you're wanting to settle and do your business in South Shields, you'll get a massive warm welcome. You'll be in an absolutely gorgeous place. You know, we've got a coastline and we've got a town centre. So we've got both of that going forward. And we're just a fun place. You know, we're a fun, welcoming place of hard workers. And that's what we've always been. And we just want more people to join us.
Fantastic. Emma Lewelbuck, MP for South Shields, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you, as always, to all our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Emma and finding out all about South Shields. Do go up and visit. Sounds like a fantastic place to be. Remember that if you've missed any of our previous podcast episodes, you can get them on our website, transportforthenorth.com. And you can keep up to date with all our news in between podcast episodes by following us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Transport for the North podcast. Don't forget you can subscribe on Spotify and SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook for all our latest updates. And join us on our website where you can find all the latest news and sign up to our All Points North newsletter.